Israeli forces killed 6 Palestinians in yet another raid on the Jenin refugee camp in the occupied West Bank. French police clashed with protesters in Paris amid a new round of rallies and strikes over the planned pension reform. And Iran announces the arrest of several people in connection with the recent poisonings of school children. Hello and welcome live from Tehran. You're tuned to World News. I'm Marzia Hashmi. Appreciate you being with us. Well, beginning this bulletin with the latest on the deadly Israeli raid in the occupied West Bank city of Jenin. The Palestinian Health Ministry says 6 people have been killed and 11 wounded by Israeli forces there. The ministry says 2 of the injured are in critical condition. Well, the raid targeted a house in the Jenin refugee camp. Israeli media say a Palestinian suspected of shooting 2 Israelis near the town of Hawara have been killed in the raid. Hawara has become the latest flashpoint in months of worsening Israeli violence in the West Bank. On Monday, Israeli settlers attacked Palestinians there, injuring at least 31 people. Last week, another rampage by Israeli settlers left nearly 400 Palestinians injured there. Let's cross over to Bethlehem, joined by Mazen Ghomsayi, Palestinian scientist and author. Thank you so much for being with us. Tell me your take on what is going on. Why have we seen the Israeli regime just continuing to up the ante as far as violence against Palestinians?
Indeed, this is what's going on is basically continuing assault by the Israeli occupation army on the Palestinian civilians in the claim of trying to get some wanted people. This is what started the whole process, is actually raids in Jenin and Nablus that killed many people. And then there was this one young man, 26 years old, I believe, who in retaliation went and killed 2 Israeli settlers, colonial settlers, who are illegally here in the West Bank. And this continues, basically, the rolling the ball down the road, basically, of many Palestinians killed for 1 or 2 Israelis killed. This is typical of the Israeli actions in the occupied territories.
So do you think we're going to see an increase in violence from the Israelis? Because it definitely seems like the resistance, that they're going to continue resisting against the Palestinian, against the Israeli violence and occupation.
Well, what we saw in Hawara, which is the site of that Palestinian killing 2 Israelis, and this Palestinian was killed today. In Hawara, there was a pogrom, basically. Israeli soldiers and Israeli colonial settlers burning houses and burning cars. More than 35 houses burned completely. And the attacks continue on collective punishment of the whole town of Hawara for an action done by one individual. This collective punishment structure has been in place, actually, since the time of the British occupation. The British were the ones who started it here, and Israel continues it as another colonial power.
Thank you so much for being with us, Mazen Ghomsayi, Palestinian scientist and author out of Bethlehem. Now, crossing over to the French capital of Paris, where clashes erupt between police and protesters amid nationwide rallies against the government's pension reform plan. Police Israelis fired tear gas to disperse protesters. Workers from different sectors have walked out of their jobs and have held demonstrations in the capital and in other cities across the country. Refineries have stopped fuel deliveries. Most trains have come to a halt, and power production has decreased during the industrial action. Now, the call for strikes and demonstrations have been given by all major unions. They vowed to bring the country to a standstill. This is the sixth day of nationwide strikes against the planned reform. The government wants to increase the retirement age from 62 to 64, arguing that the change is necessary. And now to Iran, which announces the arrest of several people in connection with the recent poisonings of schoolchildren. The Deputy Interior Minister, Majid Mir Ahmadi, said a number of people have been taken into custody in five provinces. He said a full investigation is underway, adding that more information will be made public as soon as the relevant agencies get clear results. Mir Ahmadi said those involved in a hybrid war against the country are behind the recent poisonings. Iran's leader of the Islamic Revolution has called the incidents an unforgivable crime. Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei also said the perpetrators must be handed the maximum punishment if proven guilty. The incidents have occurred in several cities across the country. An unspecified number of students have been hospitalized as a result. Eight years of Saudi-led war has left Yemen devastated with a full-blown humanitarian crisis. Now, one of the countries that has provided arms and logistics to the aggressors, Saudi Arabia in particular, is no other than the United States. Now, American arms dealers face a lawsuit. They've been sued for aiding and abetting war crimes in Yemen.
U.S. defense contractors Raytheon, Lockheed Martin, and General Dynamics have been sued by a group of seven Yemeni nationals for aiding and abetting war crimes and extrajudicial killings by selling weapons to the countries waging war on Yemen. The lawsuit, filed in the District Court of Washington, D.C., also names the leaders of Saudi Arabia, Mohammed bin Salman, and the United Arab Emirates, Mohammed bin Zayed, as well as U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken and Pentagon Chief Lloyd Austin as defendants. The lawsuit reads, "Year after year, the bombs fell on wedding tents, funeral halls, fishing boats, and a school bus, killing thousands of civilians and helping turn Yemen into the world's worst humanitarian crisis. Weapons supplied by U.S. companies through sales unlawfully approved by U.S. officials allowed Saudi Arabia and the UAE, through the named defendant officials, to pursue an indiscriminate and brutal bombing campaign. The lawsuit was filed on behalf of the victims of two separate bombings in Yemen by the Saudi-led coalition, one for a wedding in 2015 and another for a funeral in 2016. According to human rights groups, in October 2015, a group of Yemeni people were preparing to celebrate a relative's wedding when a coalition jet bombed the area, killing 43 people, including 13 women and 16 children. A year later, Saudi-led coalition jets dropped a U.S.-manufactured laser-guided bomb on a crowded funeral, killing over 100 civilians. The Yemeni plaintiffs are filing the lawsuit under the Torture Victim Protection Act, a 1991 U.S. law that allows victims of torture to sue for compensation from their tormentors if the accused are in the U.S. The lawsuit names the Saudi and Emirati crown princes under the Alien Tort Statute, a law that grants federal courts jurisdiction over violations of international law. The lawsuit, filed on behalf of the Yemeni nationals, alleges that Western-manufactured bombs have killed over 25,000 civilians since the beginning of the Western-backed war nearly 8 years ago. In December, the UN said that at least 11,000 children had been killed or maimed during the war, adding that the true toll of this conflict is likely to be far higher. The lawsuit comes more than a month after the campaign against arms trade in January said it would be taking legal action against the UK government over its arms sales to Saudi Arabia during the ongoing war in Yemen.
The the Saudi-led war and blockade on Yemen have killed hundreds of thousands of people and displaced millions of others. Saudi Arabia, along with some of its regional allies, launched a war on Yemen in order to reinstate a friendly regime there. The U.S. has openly sided with Riyadh in its military adventurism. But rights activists have been pushing for a definitive end to Washington's support for the Saudi-led coalition.
The Saudi-led war in Yemen has turned the lives of Yemeni people into a nightmare. Earlier this week, more than 70 rights groups came together to protest Washington's support for the war in several states across the U.S. The United States remains involved in enabling the military actions of the Saudi-led coalition in Yemen. U.S. military contractors provide direct support in the form of spare parts and maintenance for approximately two-thirds of the Royal Saudi Air Force. Without this assistance, these aircraft would quickly become non-operational. The coalition launched a wide-ranging aerial bombing campaign carrying out thousands of airstrikes. Coalition forces also imposed an economic blockade on Yemen, including a sea and air blockade, worsening economic conditions for millions of Yemenis. Meanwhile, the United States has no sufficiently compelling interest in Yemen that would justify its involvement in the worst humanitarian crisis in the world, nor has U.S. military aid titled The Balance of the Conflict. The Saudi-led air war has proven largely futile. The original objective of the Saudi-led coalition was to defeat the popular Ansarullah movement and restore ousted Western-backed president Abd Rabu Mansur Hadi to power. However, it appears increasingly unlikely as Ansarullah has consolidated its control in Yemen. Ansarullah has been battling terrorist groups on one hand and defending the country's territorial integrity on the other. Senior Yemeni politicians have regularly declared that the U.S. has sent weapons shipments for the Saudis to the tune of tens of billions of dollars, along with other means of support such as intelligence and training. Yemeni officials have always referred to their enemies as the U.S.-Saudi coalition due to Washington's full support for Riyadh in its war against the Yemeni people.
We have breaking news regarding that continuous Israeli violence that South Africa now has downgraded its ties with the Israeli regime, citing ongoing violation of Palestinian rights by Tel Aviv. Again, South Africa has downgraded its diplomatic relations with Israel as today alone, six more Palestinians have been killed by the Israeli regime. Continuing now with other news this hour, U.S. Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin has made an unexpected trip to Iraq 2 weeks before the 20th anniversary of the U.S.-led invasion of the Arab country. The Pentagon chief has said his visit is aimed at reaffirming the strategic partnership between Washington and Baghdad. After a meeting with the Iraqi prime minister, Austin said the U.S. troops are ready to remain in the Arab country and Baghdad's invitation. Well, the U.S. attacked Iraq in 2003 under the pretext that the then Iraqi regime under Saddam Hussein possessed weapons of mass destruction. The claim, however, was later found to be false. Tens of thousands of Iraqis were killed as a result of the invasion. Washington now has 2,500 troops in Iraq. That has resulted in turbulence and paved the way for the rise of terrorist groups there. In 2020, Iraq's parliament voted to expel American forces from the country. Well, Israel has launched fresh air raid against Syria, this time targeting the international airport in the northwestern city of Aleppo. The Syrian Defense Ministry says the airstrike caused significant damage, putting the airport's runway out of service. It says that forced the closure of the airport used for delivering aid to people hit by last month's earthquake. Now, the ministry said aid deliveries have now been diverted to Damascus and the Latakia airports. Now, the foreign ministry has called the Israeli strike a double crime. Now, the regime frequently carries out missile attacks on targets in Syria. Damascus has repeatedly complained to the UN and urged the Security Council to take action against Tel Aviv's crimes. Meanwhile, an incident involving a Quran being desecrated at a school in northern England has sparked a new row over blasphemy and respect for religious rights in the UK. Well, the incident saw four students suspended from their school in Wakefield. Muslim community members, however, say they are being demonized in the media over their defense of Islam's holy book. Robert Carter brings us more from London.
A heated debate has been sparked following the news of four teenage students being suspended from a school in Wakefield, northern England, over a Quran desecration incident. Right-wingers in the media have condemned the suspensions, alleging that the pressure is coming from Muslims in the community trying to enforce de facto blasphemy laws.
I don't care about your religious book. I don't care if it's a Bible, the Torah, or anything else for that matter. These are kids at school.
The police acted, recorded it as a non-crime hate incident, and the boys were, the four pupils were suspended. So that shows that we now have de facto blasphemy laws in the UK.
The students at Kettlethorpe High School were removed after a copy of the Islamic holy text was partially torn and scuffed. It was brought into the school by a Year 10 pupil, reportedly as part of a dare. Rumours quickly spread about the incident, some claiming the Quran had been burned, with a protest planned outside school gates. Amid growing community distress, police and religious leaders intervened, staging a press conference at a local mosque. A mother of one of the pupils involved apologised for her son's conduct.
Firstly, thank you so much for letting me come here today to speak to you. I know that what my son has done is disrespectful. He didn't have any malicious intent, but he's a very, very silly 14-year-old boy who does have some challenges. He does suffer with high functioning autism. It means that socially he doesn't always realise what is appropriate and what's not appropriate.
After debunking some of the myths surrounding the story and after realising the distress caused to an autistic teenager, the local protest was quickly abandoned. Local religious leaders called for calm and forgiveness. Right-wing pundits, however, were not content to rest. Accusations of the family being forced to an apology sparked an online firestorm, with Islamophobic trolling in abundance. News of the death threat circulated the headlines, with few reports adding the important context. The threats came from another student, not from Muslims in the wider community. Home Secretary Suella Braverman adopted the idea of Muslims enforcing de facto blasphemy laws.
Blasphemy is not a crime in Great Britain. Religion cannot demand special protection in an open society based on freedom of speech.
Onlookers have expressed concern over the Islamophobic spin being added to the story and a failure to properly represent the Muslim reaction.
The Wakefield Quran story was certainly tainted with a level of Islamophobia. And as a Muslim in Great Britain, part of an ethnic minority and a growing ethnic minority, it's only natural and valid to have concerns about this because we do not want to be misrepresented.
Wakefield is not far from an area called Batley, which is where a similar blasphemy scandal erupted just last year, where a local teacher was found to be sharing insulting caricatures of Islam's beloved prophet to students. Elsewhere across Europe, regular far-right Quran-burning demonstrations have become increasingly more commonplace. This all appears to have put Muslims on the defensive, as their religious beliefs are coming under regular attack and mockery by far-right activists. Robert Carter, London.
And with that brings us to the end of this World News edition right here. Thanks so much for staying tuned.
Congratulations to everyone on 15th of Sha'ban. We here at Arabi English Radio congratulate all our Muslim listeners on the occasion of 15th of Sha'ban, the birth anniversary of the 12th Imam, Al-Qa'im Al-Mahdi. May God hasten his reappearance. Congratulations to all our Muslim listeners on this most auspicious occasion.
in the limelight.
While announcing a strong opposition to the sale of U.S. weapons and any foreign military contact with Taiwan, Beijing asked Washington to stop creating tension in the Taiwan Strait. Chinese officials say Washington should pay attention to Beijing's legitimate concerns. We take a look at some of the world media and press's coverage of this issue. Please stay with us. The Washington Times has covered this story and tells us more. Michelle Steele, a Republican from California, on Wednesday, 1st of March, introduced a bill in the House of Representatives that would allow the U.S. to lend or lease weapons to Taiwan, as Congress is looking for ways to ship more arms to the island. The legislation is modeled off the Second World War-era Lend-Lease Act that allows the U.S. to arm the Soviet Union, Britain, and other allies prior to its entry into the Second World War. A similar law for Ukraine was signed into law by President Joe Biden last year, in the wake of the Russia-Ukraine conflict. Versions of the bill for Taiwan were introduced in both the House and the Senate last year, but were never put to the floor for a vote. Steele wrote on Twitter, "I am reintroducing the Taiwan Democracy Defense Lend-Lease Act to arm Taiwan with the tools it needs to purportedly defend itself against China." Steele claimed in comments to the Washington Times that China is a threat to global stability and America's national security. So far, her bill has received 12 bipartisan co-sponsors, 4 Democrats and 8 Republicans. U.S. Congress has been scrambling for ways to get more weapons in Taiwan's hand in the name of deterring a Chinese attack. But the increasing military support for Taiwan has led to more tensions between the United States and China, and also in the entire region. The 2023 National Defense Authorization Act includes $2 billion in military aid for Taiwan in the form of loans to finance weapons purchases. In response to President Biden signing the bill into law, China launched a major military exercise around Taiwan. The war website has also covered the same story and tells us more. The United States has approved more arms sales to Taiwan, including hundreds of missiles for F-16 fighter jets, in another move that drew strong objections from Beijing. The State Department said in a statement on Wednesday night, 1st of March, that it had approved the arms sales, including $619 million worth of missiles for the self-governing island's fleet of F-16 fighter jets, as well as equipment to support those missiles. The new package includes AGM-88 anti-radiation missiles, as well as air-to-air missiles and launchers. The United States continues to sell weapons to Taiwan in defiance of China, which has sovereignty over the island. Almost all countries, including the United States, recognize the sovereignty under the One China policy. China's foreign ministry said on Thursday, 2nd of March, it was firmly opposed to the new move, calling on the United States to stop arms sales to Taiwan and military contracts to the island. Beijing frequently sends military aircraft and ships into the Taiwan Strait to reassert its sovereignty over the island. Back in September, the administration of U.S. President Joe Biden approved over $1.1 billion in arms sales to Taipei, the largest in his tenure, which included up to 60 anti-ship missiles and up to 100 air-to-air missiles. Tensions between Beijing and Washington are at the highest level in years over American support for Taiwan, including weapons sales and visits by high-ranking politicians. The Wall Street Journal said in a report recently that Washington was planning to increase the number of U.S. troops training Taiwanese forces on the self-governing island in the coming months. It is unclear how many additional troops will take part in the expanded training exercises. The report came after Taiwanese President Tsai Ing-wen told a visiting U.S. congressional delegation that the two militaries will cooperate even more closely and plan to bolster military exchanges. An increase in the number of U.S. troops in Taiwan could further worsen relations between Washington and Beijing. The U.S. troops, which included Special Operations Forces and U.S. Marines, will train Taiwanese forces on military maneuvers as well as on American weapon systems. Under the One China policy, nearly all countries across the globe recognize Beijing's sovereignty over the island of Taiwan, including the United States, which has no formal diplomatic ties with Taiwan but continues to support its anti-China stance and supply it with massive amounts of armaments. The United States, too, claims commitment to that principle, but in violation of its own stated policy and in an attempt to antagonize Beijing. Washington has courted the secessionist government in Taipei, supporting its anti-China stance and supplying it with a large cache of weaponry. Tensions over the self-rule island intensified following a provocative visit there in August of last year by Nancy Pelosi, the then Speaker of the House of Representatives. It prompted large-scale Chinese military exercises around the island, as well as a declaration by U.S. President Joe Biden to defend Taiwan. The website of Press TV has also covered the same story and tells us more. In defiance of China's warnings, Taiwan's President Tsai Ing-wen, without providing details, said on Tuesday, 28th of February, going forward, Taiwan will cooperate even more actively with the United States and other so-called democratic partners to supposedly confront such global challenges as expansionism and climate change. China's foreign ministry spokesman Wang Wenbin charged Taiwanese leaders with provocation, warning that any futile separatist conspiracy or scheme relying on foreign forces to undermine cross-strait relations will only backfire and is bound to fail. A U.S. official familiar with the planning also confirmed to Fox News Channel on Thursday, 2nd of March, that the U.S. military is preparing to send 100 to 200 troops to Taiwan for training amid rising tensions with China. The Chinese Foreign Ministry spokesperson has reiterated Beijing's firm opposition to any kind of official interactions and military ties between the United States and Taiwan. Chinese Foreign Ministry spokesman Wang Wenbin made the comments as the Pentagon's top China official, Deputy Assistant Secretary of Defense Michael Chase, arrived in Taipei for a visit recently. Wang Wenbin said, "The Pentagon should cut off military contact with Taiwan in order to prevent another escalation of tensions in the Taiwan Strait." He said, "We insist that the United States put an end to official interaction with Taiwan, cut off all forms of military contact, stop interfering in the Taiwan issue, and creating factors leading to another escalation of tensions in the Taiwan Strait." Stressing that Washington needs to respect the One China principle and policy and agreements with the Chinese government, the Chinese Foreign Ministry spokesman Wang Wenbin added, "We strongly oppose official contact between the United States and Taiwan. China's position on this matter is perfectly clear and consistent." Chase's visit to Taiwan is the first trip to the self-ruled island by a high-ranking Pentagon official in the past 4 years. Back in 2019, then U.S. Deputy Assistant Secretary of Defense for East Asia, Haino Klink, made a visit to Taipei.
Questions and answers in Islamic upbringing.
I have a son. He's really in fond of football, and he's so weak in his lesson courses. I really don't know what should I do.
Could you tell me when we have to start upbringing of our kids, that is, from the very beginning of the birth?
I have a little son, and he's so disrespectful. I want to know how to treat him according to the teachings of the Ahlul Bayt, peace be upon them.
Answering parents' questions in upbringing their children in an Islamic way.
Do you know what Islam is? It's a way of life for all. It is taught in the Quran for big and small.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. A very warm welcome to yet another episode of Islamic Upbringing. Today we have had the pleasure to invite Professor Salman Naqvi. Assalamu alaikum.
Alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah.
The listeners, Professor Naqvi is a faculty member at the Al-Mustafa University, and we have had this pleasure to have him in the studio. We, in this program, discuss your problems, questions related to the Islamic upbringing and different topics which have a very great deal with the Islamic upbringing of children. And the answers are based upon the Noble Quran and the narrations from Prophet Muhammad and his family, may peace be upon them. Well, Professor, today I would like to start with an audience question. There's a question. Assalamu alaikum. Wa alaikum assalam. My name is Ahmad Hussain. I'm from Pakistan. My question is, I have a daughter. She's almost 10 years old, but her behavior is still like that of a 5-year-old. Like, if I travel, she still wants toys and is a little aggressive. Can you suggest some tips to handle her? So, Professor, this father of a daughter is saying that as a girl is growing up, she's not getting mature mentally.
Yes, 10 years of age of a girl, of course, she's becoming an adult now, and she's becoming responsible for things. So she should grow up, of course. But again, it falls back to the thing that we may not have given them the proper upbringing that was required. At the age of 5, she should have been allowed to express herself and to become responsible at that age gradually. So those stages if we had taken care of those stages at the early age, then she would have been, her feelings for things and toys should have been taken care of at that tender age.
Okay.
Toys are important, as I said, for playing, but toys which teach us things. Even some children, when the toys become broken, they leave them, throw them away. That should not be the case. They should be taught how to manage them, how to take care of them, how to even rebuild them back. So they should be learning all the time. If now at the age of 10 she wants toys, you can ask her to, you can make her give her choice between toys and other things which can be useful. If I go for, you can say, look, I'm going to that place, and that place has a very special souvenir. I will bring that souvenir for you. There's a special food that they make. They have special sweet dishes, or they have whatever. I will bring that for you. And actually, when you go out,
if you are actually realizing that your child is not growing up mentally with his age, then it's you who has to provide them with alternatives. It's not you to be sitting home and expecting them to be like growing up on themselves. You have to play a role in just providing them examples.
Yes, you need to provide them alternatives and tell them, look, the toys are good, but now it's your age is not for toys. You need to have things which teach you something, books or things which can, so you can practically bring things which are useful. And if you have made them, if you're a traveler, frequent traveler to other places, you bring things which they which make them curious, which make them learn things. You bring them souvenirs, you bring them books about that place, the history of that place, or yeah, cards or whatever, that makes them learn about that place. So naturally, when you come back from a journey, from a trip, when you come back to them, they will expect you to tell, to explain to them, and to narrate to them what has happened in your trip, and yeah, they will feel excited about that.
So is it sometimes you, as a parent, you are failing to, yes, show them your external exposure of world?
Of course, if you want to make them learn about things, that you want them to understand what's happening in the world, then you need to
share experiences.
Share your experiences with,
yeah,
them.
Yeah, indeed. We'll discuss more on this topic after a short break. Dear listeners, stay tuned.
This is Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran.
Contact us at englishradio@irib.ir.
Welcome back, dear listeners. You're listening to IRIB English Radio. This is Islamic Upbringing. I'm Zainab with Professor Naqavi. Professor Naqavi, we have been discussing that a child who is not developing mentally with his age, where the problem basically lies. Well, there are some of the things that you have shared with us. You told us that it's either parents who are not providing with alternatives, who are not providing with different kinds of examples or alternatives that you could have. You could be taking this instead of this. And you can actually share your own worldly experiences with them, giving time. And then that's how they can actually develop a better understanding. Well, we had one more question wherein the same person was asking, Mr. Ahmed Hussein from Pakistan was asking, is it important to give Islamic education to your children at home if you are already living in an Islamic country?
Islamic education is not just teaching things. If the country you are living in, if it's Islam, even if it's an Islamic country, and mostly the books that are taught, the courses which are taught at school are about Islam, are textbooks. And even if they are books, textbooks about Islam, they are just textbooks. They're just giving you information. They're not inculcating in you the skills or the behavior that are required for performing as a good Muslim. So informal education about Islam and how to live your life according to Islamic tenets and beliefs and rules.
That here needs the family has got a very important role,
yes,
to play.
You can't just rely upon what's being taught in schools. There are good schools, even there are maybe many good schools which teach you even Islamic, they give you Islamic training and upbringing, but that is again not enough. It has to be complemented by the training and the education which takes place in an informal environment at home. That is
so. As we say that charity begins at home, we don't have to totally depend on the schools or the environment we are living in. We have to play a role in the family as well, because as this parent has asked, that is it enough to live in an Islamic country, or do the parents also have to play some role? So what kind of informal role or what kind of indirect role these parents can play at home to teach Islamic things at home?
Yes, it's a lot of things can be taught at home. As we said, that we have four relationships with each other. Every human being has to have different relationships with different things, himself, Allah Almighty, with his family, with other human beings, with the environment. Many of these things can be taught at home, especially the love and the attachment which we have for Allah Almighty, or what we are supposed to do with respect to our own selves. I mean, the habits which have to be formed regarding our personal hygiene, our clothing, how to clothe, how to eat, what to eat. There are so many things about Islam wants us to learn about ourselves, what to do with ourselves. And that
won't seldom, be taught something in the school textbooks.
Seldom
the
it's
school,
there. It's seldom yeah. it's there in the school.
Yeah.
Or for girls, cooking and taking care of many things which they should need. They need to learn when they get married, for example. So many of these things, home economics, home management, yeah. nothing is taught at schools
yeah.
and colleges.
Well, we'll discuss more on that after a short break. Dear listeners, stay tuned.
Imam Ali alayhi salam said, "Be like a friendly physician who applies medicine where it is useful."
Welcome back. You're listening to Islamic Upbringing. This is IRIB English Radio. I'm Zainab with Professor Nakawi, and we are saying that it's not enough to be living in an Islamic country or studying in an Islamic school. And this never means that you as parents do not have any duty then towards the Islamic teachings towards your child. So, Professor Nakawi, you're saying that there are different ways, like you said, in terms of girls, home management and cooking and all. This is not something taught in the textbooks. This is something, the practical thing. So how else can we teach our children to be obedient, to be nice, to be loving, have all those Islamic reflections at home?
Yes, of course, there's a lot of things that parents need to do and have to do, and they can do. Especially one of the things which is important, even things which are being learnt at school, if they're not having the proper impact, they should give a feedback to their children, to the teachers of the to the management of the school. That is important. Number two, there are many questions which children come up with after having interacted with their schoolmates and classmates and their teachers. There are things they have to be able to manage. They have problems which they face at school. Parents need to address those issues. They need to be able to communicate with their children in a way that, for example, if a child is facing a problem with his classmate at school, there's a fight or a quarrel going on, the child needs to be taught how to manage that conflict. He needs to be taught...
Management.
Management, yes. Managing conflicts is a very important thing. A lot of issues that we face today in society, as children, as grown-up people, the problem comes when we are not able to...
Mismanagement of conflicts.
Conflicts are... Because in every human interaction, there are issues that you face because you have different thoughts and different ideas and different approaches to things. Now, there's always a difference of opinion. There's always a difference of approach in things we carry out at school, at work, at places of work. The most important thing is how to resolve those issues and those conflicts. And that is not taught to us anywhere, unfortunately. And it begins at home, because that's the most testing of places. I mean, siblings amongst themselves and their relationships amongst themselves and relationships with their parents, they are matters of conflict all the time. And this management of conflicts is very important, and that has to be taught to them at home. Schools...
So that they can actually grow up in the external environment properly.
Yes. I mean, so the actual place where they're learning things regarding human management and management of relationships starts from the home. And it comes from how we see our parents doing so. How do they manage their affairs and relationship between each other? The relationship between man and wife, how do they manage that? How, if they all the time they have conflicts and quarrels and they are at each other's throats, unfortunately, then this will be taught to our children. So we need to take care of the fact that how do we deal with ourselves, between ourselves as parents, and how we then deal with our children. This is very important, and this is how we need to teach how to manage human relationships and how to deal with them in a proper way, in a harmonious way.
Yeah. So the most important thing is that the important aspect when the child is learning is all through observation. If you're not able to manage conflicts at home, a child won't be able to manage it outside.
A pampered child at home will not be able to manage conflicts at outside of his home because he's never learned to be told off. He's never been learned to become punished.
Well, there are so many issues with the pampered children, and we'll discuss them in the upcoming sessions. Thank you so much for being with us. Thank you so much, dear listeners. You are listening to IRIB English Radio. Until another session, wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Do you know what Islam says? It says that life's the greatest test. It says that life's a borrowed space, returned upon rest.
Follow us on social media to stay up to date on the latest global developments. You can keep in touch with us by following us on Twitter at twitter.com/ParsTodayEN. You can also follow IRIB English Radio on Instagram via instagram.com/ParsTodayEnglish.
In the limelight.
In the US, a January 6th rioter has pleaded guilty to stealing a badge and a radio from a beaten police officer. We take a look at the world media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. US broadcaster NBC News has covered this story and tells us more. A New York man pleaded guilty on Friday, 3rd of March, to stealing a badge and a radio from a police officer who was brutally beaten as rioters pulled him into the mob that attacked the US Capitol over 2 years ago, according to court records. Thomas Sibick pleaded guilty to assault and theft charges for his role in the attack on Metropolitan Police Officer Michael Fanone during the 6th of January 2021 riot at the Capitol. U.S. District Judge Amy Berman Jackson is scheduled to sentence Thomas Sibick on 28th of July. The judge allowed Sibick to remain free on bond until that hearing. Estimated sentencing guidelines call for Sibick to receive a prison sentence ranging from a low of 2 years and 9 months to a high of nearly 6 years, according to his plea agreement. Rioters kicked, punched, grabbed and shocked Fanone with a stun gun after pulling him away from other police officers who were guarding a tunnel entrance on the Capitol's Lower West Terrace. Another rioter threatened to take Fanone's gun and kill him. Washington, D.C. police officer Michael Fanone's body camera captured Sibick removing the officer's badge and radio from his tactical vest during the mob's attack, according to a court filing accompanying his guilty plea. Others in the crowd escorted Officer Fanon back to the police line before FBI agents showed him the body camera video. Thomas Sibick initially denied assaulting Michael Fanon and claimed he tried in vain to pull the police officer away from his attackers. Sibick said he buried Officer Fanon's badge in his backyard after returning home to Buffalo, New York. He returned the badge, but Fanon's $5,500 radio hasn't been recovered. Other rioters have been charged with attacking Washington, D.C. police officer Michael Fanon, who lost consciousness and was taken to an emergency room. Albuquerque Cosper Head, a Tennessee man who dragged Fanon into the crowd, was sentenced in October of 2022 to 7 years and 6 months in prison. During Head's sentencing, Officer Fanon said the attack gave him a heart attack and a traumatic brain injury and ultimately cost him his career as a police officer. Carl Young, an Iowa man who grabbed Fanon by the wrist and handed a stun gun to another rioter who used it on the officer, was sentenced in September of 2022 to 7 years and 2 months in prison. A California man, Daniel Rodriguez, pleaded guilty in February to using a stun gun on Officer Fanon during the attack. Rodriguez is scheduled to be sentenced on 16th of May. Approximately 1,000 people have been charged with federal crimes relating to the riot on 6th of January 2021, when the mob of Donald Trump's supporters disrupted the joint session of Congress for certifying President Biden's electoral victory. More than 500 of them have pleaded guilty, mostly to misdemeanor charges. Approximately 400 have been sentenced, with over half getting terms of imprisonment ranging from 7 days to 10 years. The U.S. newspaper The Hill has also covered this story and tells us more. A man who stormed the Capitol building during the January 6, 2021 insurrection pleaded guilty to charges stemming from him assaulting former Washington, D.C. police officer Michael Fanon and taking his badge. A court filing stated that 37-year-old Thomas Sibick admitted to forcibly removing a badge and radio from Officer Fanon while the then Metropolitan Police Department officer was being tased, kicked, punched, pushed, grabbed and hit with objects by a mob of rioters. Police Officer Fanon gained national attention after he was attacked during the riot and for testifying about his experience before the House Select Committee that investigated the insurrection during the past session of Congress. Under a plea agreement, Thomas Sibick pleaded guilty to charges of assaulting, resisting or impeding certain officers and two counts of theft. The agreement states Thomas Sibick joined other rioters at the Lower West Terrace of the Capitol shortly after 3 p.m. on 6th of January 2021. He filmed himself saying, "Just got tear gas, but we're going, baby, we're going. We're pushing forward now," before the group he was in encountered Police Officer Fanon. The video was posted on Instagram. During his assault, Police Officer Michael Fanon was restrained as another rioter tried to take his weapon that was in its holster, and yet another threatened to take the firearm and kill the police officer. Sibick posted a video the next day saying he was concerned for the country and people need to heal. "What happened yesterday was a disgrace. An innocent life was lost, but the people are mad and the people have spoken," he said, according to the court filing. Thomas Sibick was interviewed by FBI investigators on a few occasions, but he did not mention that he was involved in the attack on Police Officer Fanon, nor that he took his badge and radio, according to the court filing. He also falsely told them that he tried to help the police officer. Fanon's body camera footage showed that Thomas Sibick took the items. Civic eventually returned the badge to FBI agents, but the radio was never found. CNN reported that Thomas Civic's sentencing will be on 28th of July. Civic is the latest of several individuals who have pleaded guilty to charges related to their involvement in the attack on Washington, D.C. police officer Michael Fanone. A 40-year-old from California pleaded guilty last month to assaulting the police officer with a taser. The British newspaper The Guardian has also covered this story and tells us more. A New York man has pleaded guilty to stealing a badge and radio from a police officer who was brutally beaten as rioters pulled him into the mob that attacked the U.S. Capitol in Washington over 2 years ago, according to court records. Thomas Civic pleaded guilty on Friday, 3rd of March, to assault and theft charges for his role in the attack on the District of Columbia's Metropolitan Police Department officer Michael Fanone during the 6th of January 2021 insurrection, when extremist supporters of then-President Donald Trump tried unsuccessfully to force Congress not to certify Joe Biden's presidential victory. U.S. District Judge Amy Berman Jackson is scheduled to sentence Civic on 28th of July. She allowed Civic to remain free on bond until that hearing. Estimated sentencing guidelines call for Thomas Civic to receive a prison sentence ranging from a low of 2 years and 9 months to a high of nearly 6 years, according to his plea agreement. Rioters relentlessly kicked, punched, grabbed and shocked Michael Fanone with a stun gun after pulling him away from other police officers who were guarding a tunnel entrance on the Capitol's Lower West Terrace. Another rioter threatened to take Officer Michael Fanone's gun and kill him. Fanone's body camera captured Civic removing the officer's badge and radio from his tactical vest during the mob's attack. Others in the crowd escorted Officer Michael Fanone back to the police line. Before FBI agents showed him the body camera video, Thomas Civic initially denied assaulting police officer Michael Fanone and claimed he tried in vain to pull the police officer away from his attackers.
Iranian news, Iranian culture, Iranian voice. This is IRIB English Radio. This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.